Good morning. My name is Leslie, and I will be your conference operator for today. Participation in this conference call is strictly limited to invited participants. This call is exclusively for financial analysts and investors. If you are not an invited guest, please disconnect at this time. I would like to welcome you to the conference call on the report on economic activity, public finances, and public debt as of the fourth quarter of 2022. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a questions and answers session. If you would like to make a question during this time, please press star 8 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press star 8 again. I will now introduce you to the speakers. Rodrigo Mariscal Paredes, Deputy Undersecretary for Economic Planning at the Ministry of Finance, and Maria del Carmen Bonilla, Deputy Undersecretary for Public Credit at the Ministry of Finance and Public Credit, to proceed with their remarks. Please go ahead.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us. With me is Maria Carmen. So we will proceed as follows. I'm going to make some remarks regarding to the global economy, then brief on the Mexican economy and the results of the public finance. And then I will pass the microphone to Maria Carmen, so she would make some remarks regarding to the debt results for the 2022 year. So let me start by saying that since the last report that we presented, we have seen an improvement in general economic activity in the perspective for 2023, especially the U.S. So basically, the inflation outlook looks better than before, and with that, the Fed and the monetary policy that would react to that inflation environment, at least at some point, looks that it's going to reach 5% rate. But some of the market participants are expecting a pricing at end of the year 4.5% of the rate. So meaning that probably if there's signs of a recession for this year, it's going to be mild, or it's going to be pushed to 2024. Now, having said that, also the Eurozone, at least for the latest variables and results that we have seen, it looks again a little less in trouble with regard to the last to the previous report in terms of the conditions that we were expecting, at least from the warmer winter, the government subsidies that have contained have contained the energy price shock from the Russia conflict, and gas prices are starting to come down relative to what we saw the last year. We also have seen some more resilience in terms of the industrial production of the Euro area, especially the non-energy intensive sectors. So this is something that we think it's going to be improving the overall growth perspective for the global economy. And finally, regarding to China, as you probably know, we've seen a relaxation of the restrictions that we saw from the COVID zero rate tolerance. That's going to be a little bit easing the supply restrictions that we saw. At least some part of the transportation costs and the bottlenecks are going to be easing. So that's also, again, positive for Mexico and for the overall global outlook. Now, in terms of the national economy, we saw today the first reading of the GDP for Mexico. We saw an increase in quarter on quarter of 0.4%. So this means that we have been growing for five consecutive quarters, and the growth has a little bit below the historical growth rate of the quarterly. And in that regard, I would want to highlight especially the the service sector that, as we probably saw last year, about a year, that this sector is catching up with the shock that they received from the pandemic. As of now, we think that we have been completely recovered from the pandemic shock, and we expect positive outcome for this sector going forward. Also, the industrial sector, I would say it also look a little bit better than previous year, especially in the last quarter. We've been seeing a recovery in the manufacturing, and we expect that the construction sector is going to be improving this year. For this year, if you do the estimates, the last figure would give us a carryover of our 1% of GDP growth if nothing changes or not. We don't see any growth from the economy this year. At least we would be growing 1%. That doesn't mean that that's what we are expecting. Still, a lot of noise there and a lot of things going on. But I think that we can comfortably say that at least the outlook looks better than the previous quarter that we reported for the economy. Now, another positive thing is the labor market. So for last year, we saw the job creation and overall the employment metrics performing quite good. The employment, the especially for the formal sector and the permanent ones had a good year. And the underemployment and labor force participation, again, Mexico has distinguished itself from having a very good participation rate. So for that part, we don't expect a wage spiral or a lot of pressures coming from the wage fields. And a positive thing is that the labor market looks quite good in terms of the results. Now, that doesn't mean that it would stay the same or we would not think that it's going to be any trouble, but what is important to remind is that if there's any shock happening to the economy, the labor market current levels are a very good point of absorbing a shock, which we, again, don't expect to be a big shock, but that's something to keep in mind. Going in tandem with the labor market, the private consumption performed relatively well, and that was also, again, supported by more credit into the economy and remittances coming from abroad. In terms of the investment, probably last year was one of the best results for the private investment. Of course, many of the growth that we saw was a catch-up growth because investment had one of the components that had the highest hit with the pandemic. And we started seeing the investment coming up from a very low level. This thing is positive, and with that regard, I would want to highlight especially the non-residential part, which has been increasing a lot. Most of the growth has been driven by the machinery and equipment, but nonetheless, one of the important parts that contributes to the mid-term, long-term growth to the economy is the non-residential part, which has been performing good. In terms of the residential and the construction, we've saw a lack of dynamism, and it's something that we are keeping track of it. But again, the last quarter, we can say that this is improving on the margin. For the foreign direct investment, again, we've seen positive results, a lot of investment coming to Mexico. Some of it's related to the new nearshoring intentions for relocation the plants, and we can discuss more about. But this is something that I would say it's positive, and we expect to be positive also this year. In terms of the inflationary pressures, for Mexico, we have seen inflation coming down. Some of the parts of the components of the inflation are still pressuring, especially we are worried about the food component, which especially the processed food and its effect that it has on the service sector, because one part of the service sector is related to the provision of food, which we have seen a pressure still coming a lot from the weather and climate issues, but also from overall global prices. One of it is, of course, the corn, wheat, and other source of food, which has pressured the core inflation in Mexico. As you probably know, we've been trying to smooth as much as we can with the programs that we've put in place, both in terms of reducing the pressures from the energy sector, especially the gasoline prices, but also trying to smooth the food inflation that is coming from abroad. And we've been trying to do some measures to relax the import tariffs and help the prices from the basic basket to be not so pressured and try to ease as much as we can, mostly because we care about inflation, but also because we care a lot about the low-income families. And for that effect, we can discuss it more, but for the PASIC and the APESIC that we've been calling, so currently we are still working with the private sector. We will be putting in place the mechanism to keep the PASIC for at least this whole year. And we're going to be discussing more measures, again, especially related to the food. And some of the private sector participants have told us that a lot of the pressure is still coming from commodities and from copper and some of the material that is used by the food products, that is pressuring the product itself, because some of these products have to be put into some bags and some jars. So that in boxes, so that kind of pressure is still there, and we're going to be working with the stakeholders to try to ease as much as we can that type of shocks. Again, this is you would not expect a huge impact into the overall inflation, but we're trying to do as much as we can and to reduce on the margin, especially related to the prices of food. Now, let me go in terms of the challenges that we face in 2023 regarding to the economic outlook. So basically, you probably know that there's still some suspicion or some projection that the U.S. economy would enter into a recession. It could be long, it could be not so deep, but again, if there's the scenario that would materialize, I would like to make some comments on what are the strengths that we see in the Mexican economy that we would be able to face these shocks and be not so much affected. So let me start by the industrial production, which is a part that we are very close connected with the U.S. For that part, what we've been seeing is that the automobile inventories are very low, 21% below pre-pandemic levels. So what it means is that if we think that eventually the auto industry would like to replenish the inventories, so there's some room to improve and to have more production there. Of course, this doesn't really account for the GDP, but it would account for the exports from the Mexican part. And if you go inside the industrial production, there are some sectors that are very connected to the Mexican economy, which have been performing relatively well. And one of the, let me list some of them. So vehicles and auto parts have been growing quite fast. This is 30%. We have a 30% share of our exports. Also, the electronics and electronic equipment, aeronautical and medical equipment have been performing relatively good. So again, we think that these sectors have been very dynamic in the U.S. and are going to be pulling the Mexican economy. Of course, this is provided that the U.S. economy doesn't perform very bad. In terms of the states, the ones that we are mostly connected, Texas, Michigan, California, and Illinois, again, those states have been performing relatively good, except for California, which has been not so good. But basically, the driven part so far has been the construction and the housing market, and not so much the other parts of the economy on that stage. So again, with that regard, we think that if there's a shock, probably it's going to be differentiated across the states, and that's going to give us some leeway or some space to absorb the shock. Finally, the part of the Mexican immigrant workers in the U.S. Have reached an amount of 7.3 million, and this is quite large. And so far, what we have seen is that the U.S. still has some lack of labor force participation, and part of it it's because some of the what it's been called the early resignation. But many Mexicans and immigrants have been participating a lot in the U.S. economy, so much that the wage bill has increased in real terms 4.7%. So both in terms of the level of employment and the wages that those immigrants are earning during or had reached last year, we think again that this is going to provide at least some base level. So if you stress that level, either with employment or with the wages, we wouldn't get so much shock to be reflected in the Mexican remittances, which, by the way, have increased a lot during the last 5 years, and this year is going to be reaching another historical levels. Now, for the manufacturing part, finally, let me say something. Regarding to the USMCA, as you probably recall, starting from July, there's going to be a change or a dividing constraint from the original contract that we signed with the USMCA, meaning that we are going to increase the core parts, the North American contract of the core parts, the principal part and the secondary part, meaning that we're probably going to be producing more original contact of the auto industry within Mexico and in North and U.S. and Canada. So we think that this is, again, on the margin, will give us a little bit of push from the auto industry and the economy. Now, let me just give you some highlights on the speaking of the automotive sector. We have been received, or we know that some of the suppliers for electric cars are going to be coming this year. For example, General Motors, Quantum, Truck, and the Luna Lithium Battery are going to be investing in Mexico this year. And the intention is that they are going to be doing investment to start producing electric cars in Mexico in a more broader way. Also, from our talks with the industrial sector, they are expecting to produce 3.5 million cars this year, which is close to 7% more from the previous year. Now, let me go to the nearshoring a little bit briefly. We received information that 400 companies are waiting to occupy industrial sites in Monterrey, Ciudad Juárez, Saltillo, and Reynosa. Some of the investment it's for different industries. Some of the industry has to do with beverage and food industries, retails, of course, auto industry. And again, we have been also in talks with medium-sized enterprise, which, again, are very interested in coming to Mexico, especially moving its business from China. But we can also discuss that later. Now, let me switch to the public finances. For the end of this year, you probably saw the numbers. We practically have a good result in terms of revenues. Of course, a lot of the positive result that we received previous year, we used to subsidize the fuel shock. Practically, the oil revenue part coming from the federal government and Pemex was practically washed by the subsidy for the excise tax. Besides that, we still receive some positive or extra revenues that we planned into the budget. Of course, there are some positive results regarding to the tax base, especially the corporate income tax and the personal income tax. We have very good results in terms of reaching a very high level, both in terms of GDP and in its growth rate. This is a positive thing because it means that there was a lot of effort to collect more taxes. Also the VAT have positive results. Overall, the budget revenues for the public sector were coming very good in terms of the program. Of course, we also have pressures regarding the expenditure. Most of the pressure were coming from the gasoline prices, which I already discussed, but also coming from pressures within the budget of raw materials that affected public works and infrastructure. Of course, the increase in the tax, in the interest rate that affected the financial cost of the debt. What I would like to say is in terms of the expanded priorities, for the last year, a lot of the expenditure was trying to be driven or to focalize in social development, in social protection, of course, in physical investment, and try to reduce or at least to maintain the current expenditure related to the wage bill and basically the operation of the government. For the end of the administration, what I would say is that from this year to the rest of the administration, we'll be trying to maintain that profile of expenditure, trying to contain as much as we can the wage bills and the pressures that are coming from the operation of the government, and put the resources in the physical investment, which we expect this year would be one of the highest investment in the last 5 years. But also putting expenditure in the economy for social protection and economic development. For Pemex, the results you probably know, they were better than the program. They made a lot of effort to comply or to have its contribution to the overall budget. They have a positive surplus of 38 billion, which again we try to manage the federal government and the public entities as buffers. So you probably saw also CFE have a deficit of about 58 billion. So that kind of reflects that the efforts that we try to do from the public finances management to smooth the shocks from different entities and within the government to help as much as we can and to comply with a good fiscal outcomes in terms of the deficit and try to contain as much as we can the shocks for the overall economy. So at the end, we end up with a lower debt that was approved and lower debt than previous year. And going forward, what we are going to be doing, both because of, I mean, we will be complying with the rules, but also with the presidential promise to keep the debt at 50% levels. So we're going to be working on that, and all the shocks that are going to be coming to the economy, we're going to try to adjust as much as we can, either within the government again and other public sector entities. So I will pass the microphone to Mari Carmen. She was going to be doing some remarks. Thank you.
Thank you, Rodrigo. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for the opportunity to share the main results on the debt management during the fourth quarter of 2022. I would like to reaffirm that the main objective of the federal government is maintain the public debt in a sustainable downward path, including all the public sector as a percentage of GDP, within a responsible, transparent, and efficient management of public debt. As you know, we are continuously engaging in strategies to improve our maturity profile, reduce refinancing risk, and seek cost-efficient transactions. I would like to highlight domestic debt, the main transactions during the fourth quarter. Most of these strategies are in line with the last mandate we have from the President to reduce as much as possible the amortization profile up to 2025. And try to smoothen out this for a smooth transition period for the next administration. On October 7, for the first time since 2017, the Ministry of Finance called for a simultaneous purchase and sale of federal government debt securities. The purpose of this transaction was to cancel debt maturing mainly 2023, 2024, and 2025. At first, a purchase action was held for 68.2 billion pesos of debt maturing between 23 and 2046, of which 40 billion pesos were used to prepay the Udibono that matured in 2025. Subsequently, an auction was held to sell long-term debt instruments for 48.6 billion pesos. On November 30th, the third issuance of Bondes G was carried out for a one-year term of 7.1 billion pesos. A two-year term of 2.7 billion pesos and a three-year term of 250 million pesos. This is part of the annual borrowing plan. As you know, we are keen to keep on moving with the ESG strategy. It is worth mentioning that a very strong governance is behind this instrument. And the projects or the budgetary lands that are behind these instruments are not fungible with other parts of the budget. And we get FPO every year to restate that the use of resources and the allocation of these resources are only for ESG that complies with the framework we have already, not only in the local markets, but also in the international markets. On December 7, the federal government auctioned a new M-Bono reference, 2033, for a total amount of 12.5 billion pesos. On December 8, the loss liability management of the year was executed. This transaction consisted of an issuance of M-Bonos maturing in 2033 and 2053 for 50.9 billion pesos, and we repurchased M-bonos maturing between 2029 and 2047. This is important because, as you know, the curve shape was inverted, so this allows us to refinance at a lower yield and also extend duration. These operations were complete without incurring in additional debt and in compliance with ceilings approved by the Mexican Congress for fiscal year 2022. Regarding foreign debt, during the fourth quarter, no issuance operations were executed. However, it is important to mention that in debt 2019, an early redemption of a bond with an outstanding amount of 1.2 billion euros, an original maturity on January 2025 was carried out. As a result of buyback operations made in the foreign market during last year, the federal government's foreign debt amortization payments scheduled for 2025 will decrease to $1.28 billion from the $4.24 billion at the beginning of the year. The Mexican government reduced by 70% these foreign debt amortization payments for the first year of next administration. And last but not least, just for transparency purposes, as you know, during January this year, we carry out our first issuance transaction to fund this year budget with an amount of $4 billion that were carried out in the international markets with a 5 and 12 tranche, dual tranche, 5 and 12 year, with a yield of 5.40 and 6.35 respectively. Mexico reaffirms its commitment to implement cutting-edge strategies to reduce social and economic gaps while promoting sustainable growth. And in this sense, we are going to keep our ESG agenda either in local markets and international markets. Now, regarding some metrics of debt, in the fourth quarter of 2022, the PSBRs stood at 49.4 of GDP. The domestic debt was for 35% of GDP, and external debt accounted for 14.4% of GDP. With respect to public sector's net debt, that included net debt of the federal government, the state enterprises, and development banks, this figure was 49.3% of GDP at the end of the fourth quarter of 2022. The domestic debt was for 34.6% of GDP, and external debt accounted for 14.7% of GDP. Lastly, the federal government net debt was 40.3% of GDP at the end of this quarter. The domestic component of this debt represented 32.5% of GDP, and the external component 7.8% of GDP. I would also like to let you know that most of the financial transactions carried out during last years, I would say last 2.5 years, has helped us to diminish the sensitivity on the financial cost. Even though we have testified a big upscale in the monetary policy stance, either from the Fed or from the central bank. During the last cycle of rising rates, 2015 to 2018, the average sensitivity in the financial costs was for 509 million pesos for each basis point. And right now, this sensitivity is for 270 million pesos for each basis point. Regarding some risk metrics, in the fourth quarter of 2022, the federal government's debt portfolio had still healthy risk indicators. Currency risk remains low. Around 81% of the federal government net debt is denominated in domestic currency and 19.44% denominated in foreign currency. As I mentioned, refinancing risk remains at low levels since the average maturity as well, along with the financial cost, is around 20.9 years for foreign debt and 7.8 years for domestic debt. In terms of rate risk, our portfolio has a still limited risk to this exposure. 77.1% of domestic market debt is long-term and fixed and nominal real and real rates, and 100% of external market debt is at fixed rates. Thank you for your attention, and we now will proceed to the Q&A.